Members and guests, please rise for the invocation by Representative Nolan and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Our most gracious Father in heaven, we, a few of thy children, gathered in this very special building and this very special part of the house in doing the people's business. We thank thee, Father, for the privilege and the honor that thou has afforded us the health and the strength that we have, the opportunity to live in this, the greatest land on earth, the United States of America, and perhaps the most beautiful part of the country in Montana. We thank thee for this privilege, Father, and we wish to recognize thy hand in all that we do and pray that we might be found worthy of thy inspiration and thy direction so that we can help those who have sent us here to do the good work for this great state of Montana. Father, we know we're imperfect. We know we have flaws. We're so grateful this special time of year where we think about the resurrection of our Savior, even Jesus Christ, for his willingness to atone on our behalf that we might have the privilege of coming back into thy presence because of his grace. We love thee. We love thy Son. And we're grateful for our many blessings. We're grateful for our families. As we are about the business of the state, please protect and bless and support and strengthen our families. Please bless all those in our military who are defending this beautiful country and our rights in our Constitution. Again, Father, we wish to acknowledge thy hand and pray that we will be in thy service and on thy errand with the things that we decide and the things that we do. Help us to be civil and to be understanding of one another's needs, for we all are different. We all are individuals with likes and dislikes. Help us to control our tempers. Help us to do thy will this day, we pray in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. The clerk will take the roll.
Mr. Speaker, 97 members are present. Representatives Buttrey, Patelis, and Weatherwax are excused.
A quorum is present and the House is ready for business. Members, before we get started, we'll be doing third reading before second reading. Representative Bertolio.
Mr. Speaker, I request to be off the record and out of the journal for the purpose of a thank you.
So ordered.
Mr. Speaker, members of the body, I'd like to thank the pages this week. Macy, Sam, Alex, and Carson, you did an outstanding job. Thank you.
Thank you, pages. Order of business number one, communications and petitions.
Mr. Speaker, we are Committee on Legislative Administration, having examined the daily journals for the 44th through 50th legislative days, find the same to be correct. Signed, Representative Jedediah Hinkle, Chair. That is all, Mr. Speaker.
Order of business number two, reports to standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, we are Committee on Appropriations, recommend that House Bill 637, 671, 686 do pass, 625, 656, 678 do pass as amended. Signed, Representative Lou Jones, Chair. Mr. Speaker, we are Committee on Business and Labor, recommend that House Bill 670 do pass. Signed, Representative Mark Nolan, Chair. Mr. Speaker, we are Committee on Education, recommend that House Bill 644 do pass as amended. Signed, Representative Seth Burgley, Chair. Mr. Speaker, we are Committee on Energy, Technology, and Federal Relations, recommend that House Bill 606 do pass as amended. Signed, Representative Derek Skies, Chair. Mr. Speaker, we are Committee on Judiciary, recommend that House Bill 696 do pass. Signed, Representative Barry Usher, Chair. Mr. Speaker, we are Committee on Taxation. Recommend that House Bill 340 and 661 do pass as amended. Signed, Representative Becky Beard, Chair. That is all, Mr. Speaker.
Order business number 3, reports to select committees.
None, Mr. Speaker.
Order business number 4, messages from the Senate.
None, Mr. Speaker.
Order business number 5, messages from the Governor.
None, Mr. Speaker.
Order business number 6, first reading commitment of bills.
Mr. Speaker, House Joint Resolutions 32 and 33 are introduced, read first time, and referred to committee. All are posted. Mr. Speaker, Senate Bills 269 and 320 have been read first time and referred to committee. All are posted. That is all, Mr. Speaker.
That objection will go to order of business number 8, third reading of bills.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill 403, introduced by Running Wolf, a bill for an act entitled Create, Grow Your Own Teacher Grant Program.
House Bill 403, having been read three several times, the question is, should the bill be passed by the House? Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 76 representatives have voted aye, 19 have voted no.
House Bill 403 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill 522, introduced by Buttrey, a bill for an act entitled Create the Montana Military Strategic and Economic Task Force.
House Bill 522, having been read three several times, the question is, should the bill be passed by the House? Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 87 representatives have voted aye, 9 have voted no.
House Bill 522 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill 632, introduced by Garner, a bill for an act entitled Implement Receipt of and Appropriate Federal Stimulus and COVID Recovery Funds.
House Bill 632, having been read three several times, the question is, should the bill be passed by the House? Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 83 representatives have voted aye, 14 have voted no.
House Bill 632 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill 635, introduced by Skies, a bill for an act entitled Constitutional Amendment Regarding Vacancy for Certain Statewide Offices.
House Bill 635, having been read three several times, the question is, should the bill be passed by the House? Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 63 representatives have voted aye, 32 have voted no.
House Bill 635 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill 640, introduced by Hopkins, a bill for an act entitled Generally Revised Marijuana Laws.
House Bill 640, having been read three several times, the question is, should the bill be passed by the House? Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 92 representatives have voted aye, 5 have voted no.
House Bill 640 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill 655, introduced by Buttrey, a bill for an act entitled Generally Revised Marijuana Laws.
House Bill 655, having been read three several times, the question is, should the bill be passed by the House? Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 69 representatives have voted aye, 28 have voted no.
House Bill 655 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill 660, introduced by Kazmaier, a bill for an act entitled Funding for My Montana Program.
House Bill 660, having been read three several times, the question is, should the bill be passed by the House? Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 86 representatives have voted aye, 10 have voted no.
House Bill 660 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill 669, introduced by Buttrey, a bill for an act entitled Generally Revised Occupational Licensing Laws.
House Bill 669, having been read three several times, the question is, should the bill be passed by the House? Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 97 representatives have voted aye, 0 have voted no.
House Bill 669 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, Senate Bill 106, introduced by Sales, a bill for an act entitled Establish License and Qualifications for Veterinary Technicians.
Senate Bill 106, having been read three several times, the question is, should the bill be passed by the House? Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 87 representatives have voted aye, 10 have voted no.
Senate Bill 106 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, Senate Bill 163, introduced by Glim, a bill for an act entitled Increased Membership for the Board of Water Well Contractors.
Senate Bill 163, having been read three several times, the question is, should the bill be passed by the House? Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 70 representatives have voted aye, 27 have voted no.
Senate Bill 163 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, Senate Bill 215, introduced by Glim, a bill for an act entitled Establish the Religious Freedom Restoration Act.
Senate Bill 215, having been read three several times, the question is, should the bill be passed by the House? Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Excuse me. Oh. Mr. Speaker, I got it.
Mr. Speaker, 59 representatives have voted aye, 38 have voted no.
Senate Bill 215 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, Senate Bill 225, introduced by Fitzpatrick, a bill for an act entitled Prevent Adoption of a Rule That Is Similar to Failed Legislation.
Senate Bill 225, having read three several times, question is should the bill be passed by the House. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 77 representatives have voted aye, 20 have voted no.
Senate Bill 225 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, Senate Bill 226, introduced by Fitzpatrick, a bill for an act entitled Generally Revising Laws Related to Candidate Campaign Finance Loans.
Senate Bill 226, having read three several times, the question is, should the bill be passed by the House? Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 65 representatives have voted aye, 32 have voted no.
Senate Bill 226 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, Senate Bill 247, introduced by Boldman, a bill for an act entitled Generally Revise Alcohol State Property Post-Secondary Education.
Senate Bill 247, having been read three several times, the question is, should the bill be passed by the House? Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 82 representatives have voted aye, 15 have voted no.
Senate Bill 247 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, Senate Bill 251, introduced by Smith, a bill for an act entitled Generally Revise Civil Liability Laws Related to Damages.
Senate Bill 251, having been read three several times, the question is, should the bill be passed by the House? Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 63 representatives have voted aye, 34 have voted no.
Senate Bill 251 has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker, Senate Bill 277, introduced by McGilvery, a bill for an act entitled Generally Revising Laws Related to States' Rights.
Senate Bill 277, having read three several times, the question is, should the bill be passed by the House? Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 59 representatives have voted aye, 38 have voted no.
Senate Bill 277 has passed the House.
That is all, Mr. Speaker.
Without objection, we'll go back to order business number 7, second reading of bills. Majority Leader Vinton.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House resolve itself into a committee of the whole for consideration of business on second reading.
All those in favor say aye. All opposed, no. The ayes have it. I appoint Representative Burgley, chair of the committee of the whole for the day.
Members of the committee, please be in order. Members participating on Zoom, please remember to sign in. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 641. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 641, introduced by Gist, a bill for an act entitled, an act revising laws related to the search and rescue units, authorizing search and rescue units to possess human remains for training search and rescue canines, revising laws related to anatomical gifts to allow search and rescue units as authorized donees in certain circumstances, allowing monetary donations for the support and training of search and rescue units, providing a statutory appropriation and amending sections. Mr. Chair.
What's your pleasure, Representative Gist?
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having under consideration House Bill 641, that I recommend that it do pass.
Representative Gist.
Members of the body, House Bill 641 is an important bill to allow our sheriff's officers, search and rescue members, and along with county coroners, the ability to use gifted anatomical parts for training of search and rescue canines. It allows individuals to gift non-viable human parts for the use and the sole purpose of training search and rescue dogs. And what do I mean by gifted non-viable parts? A gifted anatomical part can be like a hip bone from a hip surgery, an amputated body part perhaps, or perhaps a ruptured appendix from a surgical procedure. What it is not a part that can be used to enhance someone's life or to help save someone's life, like you use on your organ donation on all of our driver's licenses. The gifted anatomical parts will remain under the custodial care and the direction of the sheriff's office or the sheriff's designee. They'll keep an inventory of all human remains that are kept for the purpose of training search and rescue canines. On page 2, line 3, it describes how the search and rescue units that possess human remains for the purpose of training search and rescue shall establish policies and standard operating procedures. It'll go into inventory of, possession of, disposal of, And Section 2, new section, it allows the sheriff the ability to request, if needed, receiving funds from a special revenue account within the state special revenue fund that was established in 17-2-102. Section 3 just applies Section 2 into it. Section 4 talks about what's already in state statute. Persons who become donees for the purpose of anatomical gifts been made. There's two very important aspects of this bill, and this is why it's really important. First is to bring closure to families when someone is lost, either through an accident or a criminal act. The second part of this bill, why it's so important, is to reduce the amount of time that our search and rescue members spend out in the woods looking for people that did not survive whatever accident or levels of exposure to elements that they succumbed to. The one thing that will also help our search and rescues by eliminating the amount of time spent on the field, the dangers of tree wells, avalanches, wild animals, and exposure to elements themselves. Just a few quick facts, and then I'll jump down here. Cadaver dogs can smell up to 15 feet down in the dirt. This is how important it is in finding bodies. They can also smell up to 15 feet down in avalanches, depending upon the ice shearing that's happened during the avalanche. They have about 95% accuracy rate with proper training. That's why the training's so important. It can cost up to $4,500 to train each of these animals. They're trained to know the difference between animal bones, human bones. The human has 5 million receptors in their nose. Dogs have 200 million receptors in their nose. During the hearing, we heard real accounts of search and rescue missions that have been conducted here in Montana, one where a small child was found alive, and numerous others where individuals were deceased, and just how important it is to help bring closure to these families. So with that, I'll sit down and wait for questions.
Is there discussion? There being no discussion, sponsor wish to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is very important, very emotional hearing for some yesterday. I appreciate the Judicial Committee kicking out as fast as they did. It's a very important bill to help all Montanans. We've all been probably touched by somebody we knew or knew of. And I just urge a green vote. Thank you.
The question now arises on the motion by Representative Gieselman's committee's rise and report. After having had under consideration House Bill 641, recommend the same do pass. Those in favor vote aye. Those opposed, no. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representatives Patelis, Buttry, and Weatherwax has voted aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 98 representatives voted aye. One has voted no.
House Bill 641 has passed second reading. Members of the committee have before you your consideration House Bill 647. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 647, introduced by Galloway, a bill for an act entitled, an act revising laws related to hunting and fishing licenses for non-resident college students, authorizing the sale of certain licenses at resident equivalent prices, revising eligibility provisions for all non-resident college student licenses, amending section and providing a delayed effective date, Mr. Chair.
What's your pleasure, Representative Galloway?
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report, after having had under its consideration House Bill 647, it recommend the same do pass.
Representative Galloway.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The first thing I'd ask is if you might look on your desk, you'll see a handout that has a graph that shows the huge drop we had in 2015 of student hunters being able to afford to come to our state to go to school and then be able to afford to hunt and fish. So that's what this bill is about. And if you look that over a little bit while I give you a couple remarks, we'll get through this quickly. If I can quit fiddling with papers. So this was vetted with several of the sportsmen's group. And basically, House Bill 647 allows Montana's full-time non-resident college students to purchase a general hunting and fishing licenses at resident rate. A reciprocity provision means that only students from roughly about 28 states that offer the same reciprocity will be eligible. We have the support of the advisory council to the Montana Legislative Sportsman Caucus, and we have the support of the Sportsman's Caucus. In 2016, with that increase that I mentioned, we lost 700% of our student hunters and fishermen. The student licenses dropped by 80%, and it has not recovered. this bill helps us to try to redeem ourselves from that. So many of the organizations out there are working to recruit students to hunt and fish and teach them the ways of Montana. But these current prices are just ineffective and out of reach of most of our students. The director of Montana's Fish, Wildlife, and Parks has a goal in 2020 and 2021, quote, to identify and address barriers to recruitment and retention of hunters, anglers, and other outdoor recreationists. So the question is, why is FWP spending money to recruit hunters when we are pricing these young folks out of the ability to hunt? There's also other economic impacts we can consider. According to FWP, the average resident deer hunter spends $72 per day hunting in Montana, the average elk hunter $87 per day. Collectively, big game hunters support more than 3,000 jobs and contribute $324 million to the Montana economy. Anglers support more than 6,000 Montana jobs and contribute nearly $700 million to the Montana economy. So let's take a look at this, and I will sit for questions and reserve the right to close.
Is there discussion? Representative Seegans Crowe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I like this bill. As a college instructor myself, I'm in the room for long periods of time with these students over the year. They live here, they work here, they spend here. It's just not always feasible for them to become in-state residents at this point in their life because of their parents are supporting them or the way that their scholarship is sometimes. But this is a good bill. A lot of these students are, it's not just out-of-state students who are taking these classes at the University of Montana, but it's in-state as well, so they're hunting with their peers, and it allows them to get out there, enjoy the beauty of Montana. But also I found out that quite frequently some of these students' parents come and are hunting at the out-of-state license fees as well. So that helps our economy as well. This is a good bill. Please vote green.
Further discussion. Representative Curdy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. You know, reading through this bill, there are some good things about it, and I appreciate that. Let's do a little history here. For those of us who are here in 2015, we passed House Bill 140. House Bill 140 basically revamped the funding structure for FWP. The agency at that time was was in serious financial problems. And it was the result of a wide variety of, I'll call them give-me's, breaks that we gave for various groups to come to Montana to hunt and fish. And the end result was it caused us some serious financial problems. So a part of that bill was we formed a committee. It was called the Funding Review Advisory Council. And a good senator from Billings and myself were the two legislators who served on that committee. We met probably about a half a dozen times throughout the year prior to the 2017 session, discussing the revenues and expenditures of FWP. And again, that bill, like I said, took away a lot of the give-me's. So today we see an agency that is doing pretty well. But I just want to remind everybody that with this bill, even though in a lot of ways it has its positive, is leading us potentially down that slippery slope that we faced earlier last decade. So I just want to keep everybody in mind of where we could get. So again, appreciate your time and your interest, and thank you, Mr. Chair. And I am a no.
There being no further discussion, sponsor wish to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee. Just a couple notes. When I got elected, I took this kind of seriously, and I tried to be on every Zoom that the departments offered. One of them was Fish, Wildlife, and Park. The thing that stuck out to me is that they discussed the windfall they've had since this revenue change. And as I understood it, they're sitting on $40 million. There's no longer a deficit. If there's anything, we swung the pendulum a little too far. If we look at some statistics, if I can get it out here. Well, anyway, we've lost around 12,000 hunters, and that's just in our residence, between 2015 and 2019. You know, we really need to do something, and we can move the needle, if nothing else, just a little bit here. Nobody benefits from the current license price structure. Hundreds of young adults in our state can't afford to hunt. The portion of the population which hunts is decreasing and aging, and as a result, conservation revenue is being limited for no good reason. As wildlife management becomes more increasingly political, anti-hunting, fishing, and trapping organizations strive to shape policy both in Montana and nationwide. It is important now more than ever that our future wildlife managers, legislators, business leaders, teachers, and landowners understand and appreciate how to hunt, fish, and trap and drive the forces of our conversations or conversations. Conservation. Third time's a charm. The good news is that Montana students want to hunt. They want to be able to fish. Not only does this bill give them that opportunity, but we've made it where they can get just a fishing license if they want to. So the forecast by some of the students is that we will definitely have a revenue positive experience if we pass this legislation. I also feel that if there is states around us that don't offer reciprocity, by us passing this bill, we can move the needle to where some of our kids can get the same thing in their states, like Washington and Idaho. Montana has the opportunity to become a leader in educating our future voters and leaders about the role of hunting and fishing in our society. We will also spur investment into our state by allowing conservation organizations to effectively run recruitment programs. With this, there's two words that came up that hit me kind of hard. One was heritage, and the other is tradition. I had a grandfather on my dad's side, Hugh Thompson Galloway. He raised a family of 11, 9 to adulthood, by trapping his whole life. Now, those type of people don't exist anymore. And, of course, a lot of the things that they learned and knew about and how to work within our nature, we're struggling to understand and comprehend them as well as they had to for survival back then. So I please encourage you to vote yes on this, and let's move the needle a little bit and allow a few of our students that are coming to our state to be able to hunt and fish at a reasonable price. Thank you.
The question arises on the motion by Representative Galloway when this committee is rise and report. After having had under consideration House Bill 647, recommend the same do pass. Those in favor vote aye. Those opposed, no. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representatives Patelis, Buttrey, and Weatherwax have voted aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 77 representatives voted aye. 23 have voted no.
House Bill 647 has passed second reading. Members of the committee have before you for your consideration House Bill 663. The clerk read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 663, introduced by Lear, a bill for an act entitled, an act generally revising school funding laws, increasing the GTB multiplier and linking additional increases to revenue generated by marijuana taxes, amending section and providing an immediate effective date. Mr. Chair.
It's your pleasure, Representative Lear.
Mr. Chair, move when this committee does rise and report after having under consideration House Bill 663. I recommend the same do pass.
Representative Lear.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 663 provides valuable and needed property tax relief for school funding, providing a link between additional increases in revenue generated by marijuana taxes into property tax relief. What this bill will do is it will put more money into the GTB, the guaranteed tax base, and it will drive down the permissive mills, which are your non-voted on mills. This is a responsible way to use the marijuana money that we will be receiving. House Bill 663 provides property tax relief in the non-voted portions of school district funding budgets by increasing the GTB ratio from 232% to 250%. The impacts of raising this GTB ratio from 232 to 250. It will initially increase state support and reduce property tax on the non-voted funding. This bill also incorporates a formula to ensure that 25% of general fund marijuana tax revenue will be used to further additional tax relief over time. Each 1% that we increase in the GTB will decrease property tax by $600,000 a year. you're going to hear arguments, you might hear arguments from the other side that there's many hands in the cookie jar for this marijuana funding, and that's the reason not to vote for this bill. Well, if we only have so much funding, there wouldn't be very many bills. That's why we got our appropriations committee to figure out which bills to move forward and which bills to use on that marijuana funding. I urge a green.
Is there a discussion, Representative Novak?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I spoke to the sponsor, and that is why I'm going to stand up and say that there's a lot of hands in the cookie jar. What I would like to say is I really like every other aspect of this bill. I'm going to be a no because of the funding. He's definitely on to something. This is an issue with our local taxpayers. It puts a lot of pressure on the schools, and it causes some hate and discontent, to be quite honest, with these non-voted levies. So I like the direction that this bill takes, and I think it's definitely a topic that is worth further discussion. I just have to be a no and be hesitant, because I do feel like we have other bills today potentially allocating funds for the marijuana money. We've got other ones floating around. And I just don't think that this is the right time to allocate money out of that specific pot. So I do commend the sponsor for bringing this. Like I said, it's a topic worth keeping some eyes on and having some conversations on. But with the funding source, I'll be a no. Thank you.
There being no further discussion, sponsor wish to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just believe that now that marijuana is going to be legalized in this state, we should use that additional revenue to help our schools out, and in return, help our property taxpayers out. Vote green.
The question now arises on the motion by Representative Leo of this committee to rise and report. After having had under consideration House Bill 663, recommend the same do pass. Those in favor vote aye. Those opposed, no. Other absentees?
Mr. Chair, Representatives Patelis and Buttrey voted aye. Representative Weatherwax has voted no.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 66 representatives have voted aye. 33 have voted no.
House Bill 663 is passed second reading. Members of the committee have before you for your consideration House Bill 665. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 665, introduced by Lear, a bill for an act entitled, an act providing that booking photographs or public criminal justice information, requiring a criminal justice agency to charge a clerking fee for release of certain booking photographs, amending sections, and providing an immediate effective date. Mr. Chair?
What's your pleasure, Representative Lear?
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee does arise and report, after having under consideration House Bill 665, I recommend the same do pass.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 665 is a pretty simple bill. This bill would say that your newspaper has to pay $100 before receiving a mugshot, before they put it in their paper, unless that person has previously been convicted. I believe that a person is innocent until proven guilty, and by putting these mugshots in the paper or on the internet, that it could ruin a person's livelihood, ruin their reputation, and like I said, until they're proven guilty, they should be found innocent, and by doing this, we'll help that process along. Thank you.
Is there discussion? There being no discussion, sponsor wish to close. Sponsor has closed. The question now arises on the motion by Representative Lear when this committee is rising report after having had under consideration House Bill 665, recommends the same do pass. Those in favor vote aye. Those opposed, no. There are absentee votes.
Mr. Chair, Representatives Patelis and Buttrey have voted aye. Representative Weatherwax has voted no.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 79 representatives have voted aye. 21 have voted no.
House Bill 665 is passed second reading. Members of the committee have before you for your consideration House Bill 667. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 667, introduced by Marshall, a bill for an act entitled, an act revising the tobacco tax allocation for operation and maintenance of state veterans' nursing homes, providing an appropriation amending section, providing an effective date and an applicability date. Mr. Chair?
What's your pleasure, Representative?
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 667, that it recommend the same do pass.
Representative.
The members of the body, what we have here is it's an easy green light. We're increasing the funding from the tobacco tax revenues that are collected, the taxes, by $2 million into the state's veteran nursing homes for a cap of $4 million or a floor of $4 million, however you want to look at it. On the fiscal note, you'll see the assumptions pretty much sum it up. I did check with the appropriations guru before I did this just to make sure there wasn't going to be any harm or foul down the road. You can see there that The total cigarette tax collections for fiscal year 2020 were $63.5 million, and the 8.3% distribution was $5.3 million. So the $4 million minimum would not have come into effect. So basically nobody gets hurt down the trough. This is a green, easy one for the veterans. We have a new nursing home in Butte. Cost of maintenance and upkeep have been steadily climbing. This increase has been badly needed. Now with the third new nursing home, we need to sustain the nursing homes for the near future. Thank you.
Is there discussion? There being no discussion, sponsor wish to close. Sponsor has closed. Question now arises on the motion by Representative Marshall. On this committee, is arising report after having had under consideration House Bill 667. Recommends the same do pass. Those in favor vote aye. Those opposed, no. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representatives Patelas, Buttrey, and Weatherwax have voted aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 94 representatives have voted aye. 6 have voted no.
House Bill 667 is passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 681. Clerk, read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 681, introduced by Kazmaier, a bill for an act entitled, an act creating the Agricultural Transportation Enhancement Account to benefit port authorities, providing an appropriation, amending sections, and providing an effective date. Mr. Chair.
What's your pleasure, Representative Kazmaier?
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having under consideration House Bill 681, that I recommend the same do pass.
Representative.
This is a value-added agricultural production bill. What this bill is going to do is provide a grant. It's a one-for-one match. The private industry is going to have skin in the game. It's going to help these ports get some shipping cars and be able to ship more products from Montana internationally and domestically. So I ask for a due pass. Thank you.
Is there discussion? There being no discussion, sponsor wish to close. Sponsor has closed. The question now arises on the motion by Representative Kazmaier. When this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 681 recommends the same do pass. Those in favor vote aye. Those opposed, no. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representatives Patelas, Buttrey, and Weatherwax have voted aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 99 representatives voted aye. One has voted no.
House Bill 681 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 682. Clerk, read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 682, introduced by Nolan, a bill for an act entitled, an act providing for a property tax relief credit, providing that the credit is for a portion of property taxes paid on certain residences for school equalization mills, providing eligibility for credit, amending sections, and providing an applicability date. Mr. Chair.
What's your pleasure, Representative Nolan?
Mr. Chair, I move this committee to rise report after having consideration to pass. Mr. Chair.
What is your pleasure, Representative Nolan?
Thank you. Now we need to bring it down.
This is supposed to be the pass part.
Okay. Sorry, sir. Property tax relief credit. So, folks, we're trying to bring a bill here that brings some relief to people making $75,000 or under, and their property value is $400,000 or under. So that's what we're trying to accomplish with this bill. I just need to touch on a couple points. So for the purposes of this subsection, an owner-occupied class 4 residential dwelling with a market value of $400,000 or less, as I said, in the single-family dwelling. Section 2, a gross household income of less than $75,000, occupied a qualified residence as an owner of at least 9 months of the claim period. The relief credit is equal to 35% of the property tax paid during the tax year on a qualified residence for the school equalization mills provided for in 20-9-331. One other thing. An individual may not claim on the property tax relief if the individual qualifies for the property tax assistance provided for as a disabled veteran, provided for in 15-6-311, or the intangible land value property exemption provided for in 15-6-240. I think the last thing I'll just bring up, a taxpayer may not claim the property tax relief credit provided for in this section 1 through 4, and the residential property tax credit for the elderly. It is a good bill. It's given relief to those folks who really are in need. So I hope we can see a green light in this. Thank you.
Is there discussion? There being no discussion, sponsor wish to close. Sponsor has closed. Question now arises on the motion by Representative Nolan when this committee does rise and report. After having had it under consideration, House Bill 682 would recommend the same do pass. Those in favor vote aye. Those opposed, no. There are absentee votes.
Mr. Chair, Representatives Patelis and Buttry have voted aye. Representative Weatherwax has voted no.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 69 representatives have voted aye. 30 have voted no.
House Bill 682 has passed second reading. Members of the committee have before you for your consideration House Bill 683. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 683, introduced by Mercer, a bill for an act entitled An Act Revising the Distribution of Recreational Marijuana Revenue for Public Pension Payments and Administrative Costs, providing for specific distributions to various pension trust funds, providing a statutory appropriation, amending sections, and providing an effective date. Mr. Chair.
What's your pleasure, Representative Mercer?
Mr. Chairman, I move in this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 683 that I recommend the same do pass. Mr. Chairman.
What's your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the body, the most remarkable testimony that I've heard in the course of this session occurred in the Senate Business and Labor Committee on the 26th of February in the discussion of House Bill 457. That testimony came from the lead proponent for I-190, who said that it was never meant in the initiative to direct how the money generated from the taxes imposed by the initiative was actually going to be mandated, that in fact it was merely a suggestion. And I'd like you to take out 683 so I can walk you through that language so we can understand what the Constitution says about who has appropriation authority and what this language actually does. So if you start on page 2, subsection 3, it starts with the non-amended language. If you go on to page 3, so it starts on 2. Funds deposited into the account must be transferred in the following amounts to provide funding as set out below. And then if you go to the next page, 4, line 20, it says, funds deposited into the account provided in subsection 1 may be used only to increase revenue to each special revenue account or subaccount set forth in subsection 3 and may not be used to supplant other sources of revenue for these purposes. That is in direct conflict with Article 3, Part 3, Section 4 of the Montana Constitution, which says the people may enact laws by initiative on all matters except appropriations of money and local or special laws. And I wanted to go through that history because you're getting a lot of email from people that says something along the following. Do not do anything to disrupt the way the initiative allocated tax dollars, because that was set in the initiative. And that's perhaps why some people say they voted for the initiative. And I would encourage us to say, A, is that in fact the authority of the legislative branch? And do we have ultimate authority on how to spend dollars that are generated through revenue? I think that language makes that clear. And to the extent that the proponents actually induced voters to vote for something that was impermissible, we need to think long and hard about how much deference we would actually give to that language. Because at the end of the day, we have to make decisions about how to allocate revenue that comes into the treasury of the state. This bill is designed to say we actually have pending obligations for which we are currently not in a funded position that is optimal. We have historically between, some would argue, underfunding, some would argue not a great return on investment, even in a context in which the markets have been extremely favorable. We still have a posture of many of these funds that is not favorable. And this is a rare moment. How often do we actually have an unencumbered stream of revenue that we can look at and say, what's the best use? Do we want to start new programs? Or in fact, do we want to use revenue that we otherwise wouldn't have at our disposal to deal with existing obligations? And it is a rare moment, because if any of us had brought a bill to say, let's increase the corporate tax, or let's increase the individual income tax from 6.9 to 7.05 and generate an extra $30 million to put into pensions, unlikely that that bill would have survived. This pension issue
One
is
minute.
The biggest issue that we tend to kick down the road. There's another reason to take it seriously at this moment in time, which, as one of the experts that appeared in front of tax yesterday said, It's difficult to forecast revenue in this context. You're trying to decide what would happen in a legal market when the only market we have is an illicit market. You're trying to forecast revenue in an environment where we have 41,000 people with cards who are going to pay either 2% or 4% tax instead of people coming to this market who would be paying 20% tax. And so does it make sense to obligate revenue when we have to pay for the expenses of the program and we don't know what, in fact, we will generate, certainly in the first 2 years? So the basis for this is to say, let's not overextend ourselves when that's the context, and let's put this to debt in the short term. And I look forward to the discussion, Mr. Chairman.
Is there discussion? Representative Thane.
Thank you, Chair. Members of the body, first of all, I have great respect for the bill sponsor. I think his interest in the pension systems is notable, and I appreciate him bringing forth a potential solution. And I also acknowledge that the sole authority to appropriate rests with the legislative body. However, this bill, like one we heard earlier today, and like many we'll hear on the floor in short order, do represent a significant departure from what was presented to the voters. And while I know that doesn't carry authority, I do think it's something that needs to be seriously considered. I also recognize that the pension systems need attention, and I think it's important that we do that in a very systematic way, and would certainly advocate for an interim study on the pension system. We, though, do have, from the ballot language, some sense that the voters had interest in where the money would be allocated. And I think it's our responsibility to carefully consider that as we move forward. That measure was overwhelmingly supported. I will say that there are lots of hands in the cookie jar, and maybe they're all good uses of the funds. But I think, again, we need to be systematic in how we approach it. We need to respect what the will of the voters was, as expressed in November. And I do believe the pension systems deserve the benefit of an interim study. Mr. Chair.
Representative Dunwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the body. I, too, oppose 683. This doesn't just take some of the medical marijuana tax revenue and puts it into future liabilities. It puts all of the eggs in one basket. And, frankly, it pulls a bait and switch on the voters who approved I-190 to fund... Yeah, I mean, they were approving a recreational marijuana bill. The initiative included funding for parks. We have a huge backlog of park maintenance. We need that funding for parks, for trails, for the outdoors public lands, for health care, for mental health, services for people with disabilities, seniors, people with mental health needs. We as a legislature have a job to appropriate, not to tinker with the will of the electorate. So I'm a no.
Representative Moore.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee here. I rise in favor of this bill, and on a number of notes, you've heard me speak a number of times about our pension liabilities, and certainly that addresses that in a small way. This is not a silver bullet that fixes that issue, but it is like at least a small down payment that would move us in the right direction. But I really like this bill mostly because there's a huge amount of uncertainty about the magnitude of what these revenues will look like. Will they be next year $5 million, $3 million, $13 million, $27 million? We've already heard that there's a lot of people out there with their hand in the cookie jar. So it's going to be very challenging for us to try to figure out, well, how much do we allocate when we really don't know how much it's going to even be? So I think this is just, as I step back, it's a prudent way in the short term to just place the funds at a liability that clearly the state is obligated for. Meanwhile, we'll get more clarity over the next 2 to 4 years, and clearly those funds will support other activities and services when it becomes clear that which we have to work with. There was some hopefulness, perhaps, that maybe with the rescue funds that there would be some capacity to have some of those move into the pension plan. And unfortunately, there was specific language within that act that prohibit even a dollar to be migrated into the pension plan. But what we do have is nearly $3 billion over the next few years that will be, you know, spread among a host of services and activities and infrastructure to support a lot of things that we might have otherwise been able to allocate some of these marijuana funds for. So I find strong favor in this bill and think it's just prudent for us over the next 2 to 4 years to just let the dust settle. Then we'll know what we have to work with. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
There being no further discussion, sponsor wish to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do. And I want to start with my friend from Missoula, who started the discussion on the fact that this measure was overwhelmingly supported. And he noted that this would disrupt the will of the voters. And I think the my response to that is that's precisely why the Constitution, when the Constitutional Convention decided to look at this issue, why would they have said, we want to make it impermissible for an initiative to appropriate money? It's exactly the allure that we're seeing here. We've got people that are saying, we know that people voted. They voted in favor of this because they liked the way the dollars were spent. But do we? Is that why people voted for it? I don't think any of us know why people voted for it. And the reason why the Constitution says that an initiative should not appropriate money is because every legislature with an obligation to actually create a budget and appropriate money is left in precisely this position. So the Constitution is designed to avoid this problem. So we don't have to sit back and say, well, I wonder if in fact we somehow are bound and we have no discretion to do this. And is it a bait and switch? Yeah, it was a bait and switch. It was a bait and switch by the people that put this initiative together to try to figure out a way to induce people. And we sit here now and have no idea what in fact motivated people one way or the other. So what kind of deference should we give in that situation? And when I had a chance to talk to the committee yesterday about it, I said, this is what we're confronted with every time we pass a bill and there is an allegation in the court after that bill is enacted that says this is unconstitutional. And there are two things that can happen in that context. Either the statute will be found to be constitutional and it will remain law, or the courts will look at it and say, this is impermissible because it's unconstitutional. And in that case, it's a nullity. And that's what we face with this appropriation. If the Constitution precludes an initiative from appropriating, then I think our conclusion has to be the language appropriating the dollars that you see in that statute, that I guess I didn't point out specifically, but it's the language that's stricken beginning on page 3, starting with 4.125% of the funds to be deposited in the non-game wildlife account, and so on and so forth, all the way up to 100%. That's a nullity. That's impermissible under this language in Part 3, and we should give it no deference. It's commandeering the authority of this body, and we need to make sure that we make the decisions on what the highest and best uses are of these dollars. I want to close by saying that the fiscal note contemplates, and this is the fiscal note that was done for the initiative. I'm sure that when we get a fiscal note for House Bill 701, we'll see the current calculation. But in fiscal year 2025, when OBPP put together the fiscal note for the initiative, they said the forecast was for as much as $42 million in that year. I think there's good reason to question that. We also know that we're going to have to stand up an infrastructure within the Department of Revenue in order to implement it if this goes forward in the form that it was enacted by the voters. So there are going to be costs, and we don't know whether we're going to cover those costs, but we certainly don't want to be in the red. And it seems to me the most prudent thing to do is if we're not in the red, if we're in the green, that we actually put it to something that's existing debt instead of new programming. And I'd encourage your green light to move this bill forward. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The question arises on the motion by Representative Mercer when this committee is rising report after having had a consideration House Bill 683. Recommend the same do pass. Those in favor vote aye. Those opposed, no. Are there absentee ballots?
Mr. Chair, Representative Patelis has voted aye. Representatives Buttrey and Weatherwax have voted no.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or vote? If not, the clerk record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 64 representatives have voted aye. 36 have voted no.
House Bill 683 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, have before you your consideration House Bill 685. Clerk, read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 685, introduced by Cheetah, a bill for an act entitled, an act submitting to the qualified electors of Montana an amendment to Article 7, Section 11 of the Montana Constitution, revising the makeup and duties of the Judicial Standards Commission and providing an effective date. Mr. Chair.
What's your pleasure, Representative Cheetah?
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report, after having had under consideration House Bill 685, we recommend the same do pass.
Representative Cheetah.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is wrapped up or summarized in the title. We're submitting an action to the qualified voters of Montana to change the Judicial Standards Committee. What we'd be supplanting it with is a Judicial Inquiry Committee made up of 9 members, currently 1 retired district court judge, 1 attorney, and 7 citizens. Since the hearing on this yesterday, I've been amazed by the number of responses I've gotten from citizens who didn't fit the mold that was described by many of the opponents who happen to be all members of the legal class. People who were talking about issues that occurred involving loved ones. The attorneys who came in opposition to this bill talked about how many of the folks who filed these complaints were disgruntled convicts. But what they failed to mention is that Montana is 9th in the country in wrongful convictions. And we've had bills where we were trying to provide funding to rebuild the lives of some of these individuals who have been wrongfully convicted. If you look on page 1, line 20 and 21, that's where the guts of this are at. This inquiry commission would be assigned the duty of assisting the judiciary in maintaining the necessary balance between independence and accountability. And I am in no way indicating that any member of the judiciary, anyone with a legal background, goes out of their way to do wrongful things. But I will say, just like the rest of us, that they are subject to the flaws of human nature. One of the opponents talked about how there was no good old boys club. And that was a voluntary statement. It struck me as odd because, while not being a scholar, I do remember a line from Shakespeare that said, he doth protesteth too much. And when somebody brings something like that forward, it almost seems to me tantamount to some unsettled issue within their background. If you take a look, well, you can't take a look at it. I've got it here. The Judicial Standards Commission every year, or every 2 years, submits a report covering the previous 2 years of the biennium. And in 2017, there were 46 complaints filed against judicial officers in the state. After they were considered, 44 were dismissed, and 2 resulted in letters of admonition. So they basically said, please don't do that again. In calendar year 2018, there were 60 complaints. 54 were dismissed. I believe 2 complaints were dismissed with a letter of caution, and 4 complaints were pending as of the end of the year of 2018. So what we have is a situation where we want to give the citizens an opportunity to have their viewpoints heard. Now, I'm sure I will hear at least from one attorney in opposition, or I will hear some comments written by someone with a legal background who will tell me that these individuals do not have an understanding of the law. That was one of the comments made yesterday in the hearing, that folks don't understand the law. Well, I beg to differ with the fact that we don't have an educated citizenry sufficient to be able to ask questions of a judge or an attorney who happened to be on this panel or this commission to give them guidance on those kinds of matters. They also talked about how these matters could be resolved on appeal. How long does that appeal process take?
1 minute.
And how long is a person supposed to be subjected to not having their life back in order. And I, when I close at the end of this, I will give you a case of why this is important. But we need to have checks and balances on the judiciary. That's the job of the legislature. And what we're doing with this bill is allowing this commission to be established. So with that, I request a due pass and hope there's lively debate.
Is there discussion, Representative Bishop?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not an attorney, but and I never thought in a session that I would be rising so often on this floor in regards to issues of the judiciary. Let me bring your attention to what I find most troubling about this particular idea. So if you look on line 25, you see that the change that's happening aside, and we'll get to the change in the makeup as well, is that upon recommendation of the commission, which was what would be formerly a commission and is now becoming a inquiry commission, this commission would have the opportunity to retire a justice or a judge. And so essentially this commission would be given without any stop the full ability to remove people from their office or from the judiciary as a judge. And what was previously there was that they could make a recommendation that would go to the Supreme Court. So we're thinking about issues of independence and accountability, but I think we also need to think pretty clearly about issues of separation of powers. Because what this change does is when you look at the change in who would be on the commission, remember that all of those members would be appointed by the governor. And then those members would have a direct ability to remove judges from office. And those members would be made up without one, it would remove any currently sitting judge from sitting on that body. So what was pointed out to us in committee is that if you really think about the many different kinds of commissions and oversight bodies that we have in state government that we consider in every realm, what we see on every one of those that has this kind of authority is that the people who are sitting on them are actually people who are in the practice of that sector currently at that time, understanding the issues in front of them. This would remove that. It would increase the number of people in the public who would not necessarily have any of that knowledge. Sure, they could all become knowledgeable, as could we, but then they would be given that full stop authority to remove judges from office. So when we think about independence, I feel like we're missing the mark on this one. Accountability, maybe, but if we really care about the citizens and their opportunity, as we have been reminded many, many times before, that's what we have the ballot box for. So with that, I urge a red light.
Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering if the sponsor would yield to a question.
Sponsor, yield.
I yield.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good representative. I was wondering if in the research for this bill, if you came across the average age of our district court judges.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, I did not. I did not look at the age of it. I would imagine it's fairly advanced.
Okay. Follow up, Mr. Chair?
I yield.
Mr. Chairman, good representative. Also in your research, were you able to find any numbers on how many retired district court judges still reside in our state?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that was not part of the research that we did.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to speak to the bill. Members of the body, in business and labor this session, we've dealt with several bills pertaining with commissions and boards, and several bills have dealt with the lack of being able to fill these boards, and we actually have seen bills that would reduce the size of boards and that have changed the curriculum for certain boards to allow more people the opportunity to serve on these boards. And so I find serious concern with this particular bill when we just heard from the sponsor that we do not know the average age or do we know how many retired district court judges reside in our state. So I think we're setting up a commission that we're not going to be able to fill. And if we look at the judge's retirement system, there's a big proof of fact there that the judges' retirement system is successful because our judges, our district court judges, are senior in age. And so when they actually retire, they're not drawing money from that system. And so I'm going to urge a strong red on this because I think we are establishing something that in no way are we going to be able to fill and have this be a successful commission. So I urge a red.
Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if a legislative session has ever had more bills dealing with the Judicial Standards Commission than we have. I think this may be as many as the third time we've seen a bill here. And I guess I first want to say that my friend from Missoula opened and noted that in the hearing there was some sort of conversation about wrongful convictions. We heard that same sort of thing in Section D, and I worry that that narrative is getting out there, that somehow Montana has an exceedingly high rate of wrongful convictions, because I keep hearing it repeated, and I don't think the data supports it. And I know that the sponsor, that wasn't a key part of what he was trying to accomplish with this bill. Because we're seeing so many bills, I think what I hope we could do instead of submitting this to the voters is to commit that we would do an interim study. Because I don't know the data that the committee heard. I'd like to know more about either the way it's functioning and the allegations. I think we need to give it more light a day. And I would gladly join you in that effort. But I'm uncomfortable going down this road until we spend more time doing a deep dive trying to figure out the facts that I think may have initially been heard. But I'd like to ask some questions of some of those folks because I want to make sure that before we go down this road, we've got enough balance in our thought process. So for today, I'm a red. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
No further discussion. Would sponsor like to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would appreciate the comments from a good friend in front of me because when I listen to him talk, there's an awful lot of sensibility. I'm reminded of an old saying, and apparently I've gotten to the age where old sayings come back to mind, and that the definition of a board or a committee is a group that gets together to take minutes and waste hours. And I wonder how often we do that with some of the interim study committees we have. So I would not be opposed to that. I think that's a good idea in addition to this. But what we're doing is empowering citizens, in my estimation. And we have an awful lot of them who, as I mentioned, have reached out and said they like the idea we have here. To address a couple of concerns, one had to do with retired district court judges. We talked about possibly changing that or amending that and making it current district court judges. They meet once every quarter, so it's not a significant time commitment. But if you take a look at the fact that initially we've crossed out two district court judges and gone with one, so we've actually cut the number who would participate by 50%. So if we have a limited number, I think we've just done a big favor to ourselves. Also on line 26, it says the commission may. So they do, they're empowered. They may remove someone, but it doesn't say that they're going to. So the fact that we're using the prospect of things to prevent us from doing what we believe is a good thing is, I think, wrong-minded. As I mentioned, human nature prevents objectivity oftentimes due to familiarity. I don't know if people remember, but in the last two or three years, well, actually one recently and one in the last 3 years, we had a judge in Billings who issued a suspended sentence or probation for somebody who had sexual intercourse with a minor who was 14. And I think it was 6 months of probation. And here in the last couple of months, there was a case of somebody who 6 years ago sexually abused a five-year-old, and they were placed on probation. Now, in those instances, I believe parents would have a difficult time controlling their emotions, thinking about what they would how they would respond if it was their kids. But I believe it's important that we incorporate citizens of Montana in making decisions of this nature. We heard that earlier from a Helena representative about the will of the people on I-190. I see no difference in how this would be implemented. But I'm going to close with something, a couple things. First of all, this committee would be a supermajority of we the people. We are the sovereigns. We may not be the most educated, but I'll tell you what, the people I've met in this body have reinforced my conviction that Montana is made up of great people. But within the last 2 years, somebody who I know personally, and many of you know personally, was sent to prison because of a tragic accident. The witnesses, the police investigating it, all the parties that took part in providing evidence said that it was an accident. A loaded weapon in a vehicle discharged, causing someone's life to end. It is not illegal in the state of Montana to have a loaded firearm in your vehicle. If it were, and we told this body, you've got 30 seconds, get to your vehicle and get your weapon out of there, there would be a mass exodus, I would believe, through these doors. So as this person went through their trial, the judge who was involved made a claim on the stand that the person who died was a very close, dear friend, a father figure. Now you tell me how someone can maintain objectivity when they've lost somebody that close to them. The judge admitted the offender did not break the law or violate any statute. It's a matter of public record. But this person was denied the opportunity to be released early simply because the system failed him. And I believe it started with the decision of the judge. So I want to empower the citizens of Montana to have an opportunity to hold the judiciary through the checks and balances established in our Constitution accountable for the decisions that they make. So members, I urge a green vote. Appreciate your time. Have a blessed Easter.
The question arises on the motion by Representative Cheeto when this committee is rising report after having had under consideration House Bill 685. Recommend the same do pass. Those in favor vote aye. Those opposed, no. Other absentee votes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patelis and Buttrey have voted aye. Representative Weatherwax has voted no.
Has every member voted? Does the member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 47 representatives voted aye. 52 have voted no.
House Bill 685 has failed to pass. Members of the committee, you have under your consideration House Bill 688. Clerk, read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 688, introduced by Kazmaier, a bill for an act entitled, an act providing for an interim study of winemaking in Montana, providing an appropriation, providing an effective date, and providing a termination date. Mr. Chair.
What's your pleasure, Representative Kazmaier?
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having under consideration House Bill 688, that it recommend the same do pass.
Representative.
This is a simple bill. We killed the wine bill in the Agriculture Committee, so I'd like to study it, see if it actually has a place in Montana agriculture. As for due pass, thank you.
Is there discussion? Representative Curdy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quickly, one of the goals we've been trying to do in Montana agriculture is develop high-value crops on small acreages. If you were in committee the other day and listened to a winemaker in Valley County, you find out how we can do this. And this study bill, I think, really will accentuate how we can develop value-added agriculture on those acreages. I ask for a two-pass.
There being no further discussion, sponsor wish to close. Sponsor has closed. Question now arises on the motion by Representative Kazmaier on this committee's rising report after having had under consideration House Bill 688 recommends the same do pass. Those in favor vote aye. Those opposed, no. Other absentee votes.
Mr. Chair, Representatives Patelis, Buttrey, and Weatherwax have voted aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 88 representatives have voted aye. 12 have voted no.
House Bill 688 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 692. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 692, introduced by Holmland, a bill for an act entitled, an act implementing the provisions of House Bill 2, expanding uses of the State Water Project Hydroelectric Power Generation Special Revenue Account, amending section and providing an effective date. Mr. Chair.
What's your pleasure, Representative Holmland?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Bill 692, I'd recommend the same do pass.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ladies and gentlemen, House Bill 692 is a companion bill for Section C. A companion bill is necessary in order to follow alongside of anything that Section C had put in House Bill 2 because we cannot change code in House Bill 2. So what actually happened with this bill was that early in the time of having our subcommittee, we were needing to find some money to be able to give to the conservation districts in addition to the money that was already appropriated for them but came up short because of coal. So one of the places that we looked was in the hydropower generation. That's the bill you see in front of us. But when we got to investigating into it, we found out this was not a good location to get the money from, and the decision was made that we would get it elsewhere. We found the money, and we'd be able to put it in there. So I went to the drafter, and I suggested that we completely eliminate this bill. They said, no, we need to have something in the bill in order to get it across to the Senate in case they needed a Section C companion bill. I suggested that we put some minor thing in here, and they said, no, let's just leave what we have. That's what you see in front of you. This bill will be stripped when it gets to be the Senate and will not be implemented. This is just to get it across so that the Senate has a companion bill for Section C. I would ask for a yes vote. Thank you.
Is there a discussion? There being no discussion, sponsor wish to close. Sponsor has closed. A question arises on the motion by Representative Holman. The Women's Committee's rising report after having had under consideration House Bill 692 recommend the same do pass. Those in favor vote aye. Those opposed, no. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representatives Patelas, Buttry, and Weatherwax have voted aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 98 representatives have voted aye. 2 have voted no.
House Bill 692 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Bill 702. The clerk will read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 702, introduced by Carlson, a bill for an act entitled An Act Prohibiting Discrimination Based on a Person's Vaccination Status or Possession of an Immunity Passport, Providing an Appropriation and Providing an Effective Dates. Mr. Chair?
What's your pleasure, Representative Carlson?
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report, after having had under consideration House Bill 702, it recommend the same do pass.
What's your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As some of you might remember, I recently brought a bill that I wrote last fall, which included prohibiting discrimination based on your vaccine uptake and also prohibited the use of vaccine passports. Well, I think we know that ship has sailed. We know we will be using vaccine passports in this country. Last week, the White House indicated they will be coordinating the development of a national vaccine passport. I think you probably received plenty of information online and in your box and from your friends that vaccine passports are going to be a real thing. So what we need to do now is to prohibit discrimination based on your vaccine uptake and also on your choice to possess a vaccine passport or not. Graduations are coming up, another season of weddings, the next legislative session. And I anticipate all of these activities requiring some sort of papers, please activity if we do not act now. Hopefully, like me, you will not accept another Zoom wedding as the new normal. Make no mistake, this will soon affect us all. I'm not going to ask you to find anything on your desk, because if it looks anything like mine, that isn't a thing that happens. But you might have noticed some handout on your desk about nurses who have had to take action against their hospitals because they didn't allow exemptions. This isn't a new or isolated problem. On the other side of the paper is the way it should work. Is a memo from a city telling their employees that they want them to get a vaccine. And on that same paper, it says, we will be allowing exemptions for medical or religious reasons. That very important difference in the scenarios is that any vaccine policy must make allowances for exemptions, which is exactly what House Bill 702 allows and requires. Montana's pre-K through post-secondary students have been allowed religious and medical exemptions from mandatory school vaccine policies by state law for nearly four decades. But as I discussed this just this morning with a colleague, adults in this state have no such protection. This bill will add that protection. You should never be discriminated against because you opt out of a vaccine. I encourage you to respect the rights of those who wish to opt out. Please vote with me for individual body autonomy, the original private property right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there a discussion? Representative McCamey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House Bill 702 be amended and request that amendment HB 07002 be posted and deemed read.
So ordered. Representative McKamey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Simply put, this amendment clarifies the sponsor's intent to allow a requirement for a vaccination as long as an exemption for medical or religious reasons has been entered into as a policy. This is something that we really need in this, and so I'm going to just show you where the amendment is in your bill. If you will turn to page one, just the very, very first page on line 24, it takes the word government and turns it to governmental entity. And then the bulk of the amendment, just for clarification again, not changing the policy, it's just saying that the government, it's changing government to a person on line 5, sub 2, a person, entity, or an employer may require a vaccine as long as the person, governmental agency, or employer allows an exemption for a person to decline to be vaccinated based on medical or religious grounds. So they just are requiring a policy of the governmental agency, or the governmental entity, rather, the employer, or the person. And that's the gist of it, Mr. Chair.
Is there discussion on the amendment? Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative, for that amendment. This is a friendly amendment. I appreciate it very much. It was the result of a lot of working together, which as the bull in the china shop that I am, I've learned is very important. And I appreciate very much the willingness of other all interested parties to work to make this policy happen for the people of Montana. It is a friendly amendment, and I urge you to vote green. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
There being no further discussion, does the amendment sponsor wish to close? Amendment sponsor is closed. The question arises on the amendment of Representative McKamey. Those in favor vote aye. Those opposed, no. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representatives Patelis, Buttrey, and Weatherwax have voted aye.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 99 representatives voted aye. One has voted no.
The amendment has passed. Is there discussion on the bill as amended? Representative Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that that amendment went on. I do need to still rise in opposition. First, I think just there's the general idea of policies like this one, which can make vaccinations controversial when they've really actually been one of the best public health things that's happened to us in the last century, and have really can be credited with much of the health that we enjoy today. And I say that with respect for those who I know have been harmed, and I appreciate trying to carve out their protections. My big concern with this bill, even after it's been amended, if you look again, taking you back to the first section in line 24, section 1A, the impact that this would have for child care providers. So right now, child care providers require vaccinations, and they are the one space, different from healthcare, where the only religious exemption is just for one particular vaccination, and the rest of them are not allowed to be religiously exempted. And so what we would essentially be doing, and I don't know if it's intended or not, is we would be blowing out the current protections that we have for child care providers in our state. And the impact of that, I recognize there's an impact for the families where their children cannot be vaccinated, or there's real genuine and valid concerns for that.
But there are also those families that would love to have their kids vaccinated, and they cannot, as well as the young infants who are not yet at the stage where they would be vaccinated. And so it is really the goal of those child care providers to make sure that they are holding the safety for those families in place as well. And I would remind you that when we think about this, some of the numbers that we heard quoted were, I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 94 or 95% of families are vaccinating their children. And so it is the vast majority of families in our state. And as we think about this and where that intersects with other times that we have talked about the importance of the child care sector to getting our economy on track, and how critical that is, I worry about removing that at this very moment and throwing it into some chaos that I think could be damaging. So I encourage you to be a no.
There being no further discussion, does the sponsor wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do. I hope everyone goes home this weekend and has a blessed resurrection weekend and remembers the reason for the holiday that we're having this weekend. And I thank you for a green vote, Mr. Chair.
The question now arises on the motion by Representative Carlson. Will this committee does rise and report after having had in consideration House Bill 702, it recommend the same do pass. Those in favor vote aye. Those opposed, no. Are there absentee votes?
Mr. Chair, Representatives Patelis and Buttria voted aye. Representative Weatherwax has voted no.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or vote? Not the clerk record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 66 representatives have voted aye. 34 have voted no.
House Bill 702 has passed second reading. Members of the committee, you have before you for your consideration House Resolution 5. The clerk read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Resolution 5, introduced by Usher, a resolution of the House of Representatives of the State of Montana formalizing the long-held, traditional, and inviolable decorum of the Montana Legislature that members of the House of Representatives dress in professional business attire and comport themselves in a manner that respects and upholds the integrity of the legislative institution and is befitting of the honor and the privilege of the position that members of the House of Representatives hold in office on behalf of the citizens of Montana. Mr. Chair.
What's your pleasure, Representative Usher?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration House Resolution 5, that it recommend the same do pass.
Representative Usher.
Mr. Chair, actually what I'd love is for us to go outside and have the rest of the session at the picnic tables. But since we're in here and we have a job at hand, I would like to talk about House Resolution 5. This bill, as we all know, came through Rules Committee. And the Rules Committee was having a discussion approximately 2 weeks ago about dress and decorum on the House floor and in committees. And some point during that conversation, someone, I don't remember exactly who it was, asked if we could just bring something forward so everybody could vote on, because this was a waste of time and we wanted it to all move forward. So I took that to heart and I put together House Resolution 5. House Resolution 5 is not targeted to any one person or any specific violation of any dress or decorum. I can think of off the top of my head right now at least five people in the last day or two that have been outside of the normal dress and decorum. I remember when I was on a baseball team as a child, and now they do with the professional baseball teams. If you show up to the baseball field wearing the uniform, you're allowed to play. If you're not, coach puts you on the bench and you have to sit over in the corner. If you show up in court and you don't have the proper attire, it is up to the judge and solely up to that judge what they want to do. They can cite you for contempt, which could mean a fine, refusal of entry, or even go as far as being jailed. That's under the purview of one person. This body has a lot of different employees that work for us in leadership, including our Sergeant-at-Arms, They have a dress code, and our sergeant-at-arms make sure that his people are in that every day. If not, he sends them home. Our rostrum staff has a dress code, and they sign it. If they don't adhere to it, they lose their job. Our pages are sent a dress code before they arrive. I can tell you when my daughter was a page, she went to the store because she didn't own most of those clothes. So she went to the store to make sure she was going to be within the rules. With that said, I believe that this house has some good history. It needs to be honored. It needs to be respected. And part of that is dressing professionally. I believe in it so much as for probably 8 years, I told people I was not going to run because I hated to wear this monkey suit and I refused to wear a tie. When they finally convinced me, I had convinced myself that I would, based on the fact that this is a very historic and honorable position that I have been voted into, and each one of us all have been voted into, and we should all understand what professional attire means and how respectful that is to the body, the history, and our forefathers that have sat in these same chairs that we are today. So with that said, I will stand for questions and request due pass.
It's our discussion, Representative Ferris Olson.
Mr. Chair, members of the body, I speak in opposition to this resolution today for a few reasons. But first, I think we had a relevant discussion in judiciary this morning about the role of a judge. And in this case, that would be the role of the speaker. The role of the judge includes not to insert what has been omitted or to omit what has been inserted. And I think that this resolution invites the speaker or the body to do just that. It's full of ambiguities that someone's going to have to decide. I mean, in committee, we talked about lack of definition of ties in particular. I asked, what's an appropriate tie? Does it include ties with Looney Tunes pictures, other logos? If I wanted to wear a Bernie Sanders tie, would that be appropriate? If it was had a commercial logo, would that be appropriate? Must the ties be tied? Do the ties have to be worn inside one's collar? Are bolo ties allowed? Are bow ties allowed? Are priest collars included in the definition of tie? Tie is not defined. And so if we're going to require our members to abide by this dress code, we should at least give them clarity on what that dress code includes. This simply doesn't do it. The same holds true for what's included in clothes that women are allowed to wear. There's no definition of a dress like suit. We don't know if letters are appropriate, outer layers. We don't know about jacket-like sweaters. What about cardigans? We just don't know what's allowed and what's not allowed. And that ambiguity allows this body to abuse its power and kick people out. So that's the other problem I have with this resolution. If we look at the bottom half, the remedy is to disallow someone from participating in the session, either electronically or on the House floor. That's not something this body should do. We were elected by folks from around this state to represent them and to vote for various bills or vote against various bills. But this allows the majority of the body to exclude someone from voting. And it provides no exceptions to allow them to go and correct that, the clothing error. But it also provides no exemptions for religious purposes or for medical purposes. And so while I understand that everyone wants us all to dress professionally, which I think we're all doing at the moment, it just has too many ambiguities and doesn't have enough clarity. So at the end of the day, I'm going to ask you to vote against it, because not just because of those ambiguities, but if we look at the past pictures that were shared with us, in about every one of those pictures, someone was seen without a tie or wearing a sweater or what under this policy and under our discussion in the Rules Committee, I would assume is not appropriate dress for this body. Yet they were allowed to participate, allowed to vote, and allowed to vote for and against bills. This doesn't do it. At the end of the day, this isn't a baseball game. This isn't a courtroom. We were elected by voters from around the state to represent them. And whether we're wearing a tie or not should not be the deciding factor. So I ask you all to stand up and vote against this bill and ensure that we're allowed to represent our folks regardless of whether or not we're wearing a tie or a cardigan. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Representative McCamey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I rise to support the bill that representative has brought in route in seat 77. And I agree with what the good representative in seat 77 said. This is an august body. This is a historic place. This is a place of special privilege and solemn privilege. And we are here to do the business of the people of Montana. So it's appropriate that we are in business attire. It's appropriate that we are in professional attire. And there is nothing, I don't think anyone would disagree with this, there is nothing all that uncomfortable about what we are wearing, otherwise we wouldn't be wearing it. I heard some moans. That can change. So every job that I've ever held has not only had a dress code, but you signed the dress code. It was written, and you read the dress code, and when you got through reading the dress code, you signed your name that you were willing to wear the required attire. And the attire was pretty general. It wasn't specific, because each individual is an individual, and you were allowed to operate within the parameters of professional dress. And professional dress is what we are in today. And I applaud you all for that. And I hope that we can just not make a bigger issue of this than we need to. I think this is, I don't think it's silly, and I don't think it's petty. But I do think it is a very small issue. If we make this bigger than what it is, I think that that is unfortunate and wrong. So let's just get about the business of the people of Montana professionally. Thank you. Members of the body and...
There being no further discussion, does the sponsor wish to close? The sponsor has closed. The question now rises on the motion by Representative Usher when this committee is rise and report after having had in consideration House Resolution 5 recommend the same do pass. Those in favor vote aye. Those opposed, no. Other absentee votes.
Mr. Chair, Representatives Patelis and Buttrey have voted aye. Representative Weatherwax has voted no.
Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? If not, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chair, 67 representatives have voted aye. 33 have voted no.
House Resolution 5 has passed second reading. Chair recognizes Majority Leader Vinton.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee rise and report.
You've heard the motion by Majority Leader Vinton. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it, and so ordered.
Mr. Speaker, we are a committee of the whole, having had under consideration business on second reading, recommend as follows.
Mr. Speaker, I move adoption of the committee report.
You've heard the motion to adopt the committee report. All those in favor will vote aye. All those opposed will vote no. Clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Speaker, 71 representatives have voted aye, 22 have voted no.
The committee report has been adopted. Thank you, Representative Burgley. Without objection, order of business number 9, motions. Majority Leader Vinton.
Mr. Speaker, I move to re-refer House Bill 663, generally revising school funding to increase GTB and lower property taxes, to the Appropriations Committee. Mr. Speaker.
Without objection, so ordered.
Mr. Speaker, I move to re-refer House Bill 681, create agricultural transportation enhancement account for port authorities, to the Appropriations Committee. Mr. Speaker.
Without objection, so ordered.
Mr. Speaker, I move to re-refer House Bill 682, provide for property tax relief income tax credit, to the Appropriations Committee. Mr. Speaker.
Without objection, so ordered.
Mr. Speaker, I move to re-refer House Bill 683, distribute recreational marijuana revenue to unfunded pension liability, to the Appropriations Committee. Mr. Speaker.
Without objection, so ordered. Seeing no more, order of business number 10, unfinished business.
None, Mr. Speaker.
Order of business 11, special orders of the day.
None, Mr. Speaker.
Order of business number 12, announcement of committee meetings. Representative Gunderson.
House Natural Resources, upon adjournment, we've got five or six EAs, and we'll get them done. Thank you.
Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We're going to not be in until Tuesday of next week, and we'll be in at 8:30, please.
Representative Cashmire.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Ag at 3, room 137.
Representative Custer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Local Government at 3, Room 472. One bill and two EAs.
Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to be off the record and out of the journal for the purposes of an introduction, please.
So ordered.
I wanted to just point out a constituent from actually the Gallatin area in the audience, Heather Richards, who's been here many times this session as a citizen advocate for things that she cares about, and I just want her to know how much I appreciate her, and I think a lot of you do. When we see citizens in this body and in our committees, it helps us do a better job serving the people. So welcome to her. Thank you.
Welcome to the House. Representative Skies.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise on a point of personal order, please.
So ordered.
Actually, I'm sorry, a personal privilege.
So ordered again.
I'm going to read an excerpt of a letter dated April 7, 2017, out of the United States Senate. I'll read part of it. Regardless of our past disagreements on that issue, which is us speaking to arguments on the floor, we are united in our determination to preserve the ability of members to engage in extended debate when bills are on the Senate floor. We are mindful of the unique role the Senate plays in the legislative process, and we are steadfastly committed to ensuring that this great American institution continues to serve as the world's greatest deliberative body. Therefore, we are asking you to join us in opposition to any effort to curtail the existing rights and prerogatives of the senators to engage in full, robust, extended debate as we consider legislation before this body. This letter was written in support of the filibuster. There were letters also signed by our new Vice President Kamala Harris and our current Majority Leader in the Senate, Mr. Schumer. I'd just like to tell you folks that a lot of people on this floor are going to hold you accountable to that promise. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Karjala.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request to be off the record and out of the journal for the purpose of reading the preface to Leaves of Grass by Walt Whitman.
So ordered.
Thank you. This is what you shall do. Love the earth and sun and the animals. Despise riches. Give alms to everyone that asks. Stand up for the stupid and crazy. Devote your income and labor to others. Hate tyrants. Argue not concerning God. Have patience and indulgence toward the people. Take off your hat to nothing known or unknown, or to any man or number of men. Go freely with powerful, uneducated persons, and with the young, and with the mothers of families. Re-examine all you have been told in school or church or in any book, and dismiss whatever insults your own soul. And your very flesh shall be a great poem, and have the richest fluency not only in its words, but in the silent lines of its lips and face and between the lashes of your eyes and in every motion and joint of your body. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Usher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Judiciary, Tuesday morning, 8 a.m.
Representative Nolan.
Mr. Speaker, I think you're going to announce when we're going to meet in a moment. So at the moment, Business and Labor will meet Wednesday.
Do you need a heads up?
Kind of.
Tuesday at 10.
Okay. We'll
meet. And members, for some of the bills that were passed out of tax and Business and Labor today, we haven't not able to read them across until the fiscal notes catch up, so we will read them across the rostrum at the Tuesday morning board and have them on the second board on Tuesday. With that, Majority Leader Vinton.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn and reconvene at 10 a.m. Tuesday, the 65th legislative day.
You've heard the motion, Majority Leader Vinton. All those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The House will reconvene at 10 a.m. Tuesday, April 6th. The House is adjourned.